There's nothing like biting into a crisp, juicy apple or drinking a glass of apple juice in the morning with your pancakes. Apples invoke the images of fall and sprawling orchards. But have you ever taken a minute to consider where the apples in your grocery store, in your apple juice, or even in your kids' baby food comes from? Apples are the number one consumed fruit in the U.S. and are grown in all 50 states. The apple industry is a key part of the U.S. economy, and apples are a staple on many Americans' tables. This brings us to the topic of our 8th episode, apple production. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of A Day in Agriculture. The U.S. is the second largest apple producing country in the world. In this episode, we're going to give an overview of the apple industry and how it functions. I'm going to also give some background on the industry and its importance, describe the process from farm to table, and then we'll go straight into our interview with Miss Linda Pryor, a third generation farmer and apple producer. So, to start us off, I want to emphasize the vastness of the U.S. apple industry. There are over 26,000 apple producers in the country, 11.1 billion pounds of apples grown in the United States, and over 7,000 varieties. These apple farms take various forms, from your small roadside stands and orchards to large farms producing for commercial use. One of every three U.S. apples that are grown is exported to a foreign country for consumption. Apples originated in Central Asia and were gradually moved westward through trade routes. Over time, apples were bred to be sweeter, larger, and more like the fruit we have today. The Egyptians, Greeks, and Romans all cultivated apples. Rome can be credited for bringing apple seeds to the British Isles, where the fruit flourished. From here, apple trees and seeds were brought to New England, and apple orchards began to spread in North America. At this time, apples were widely grown to be made into cider because the cider was safer to drink than the water that had to be painstakingly boiled before it was safe for consumption. Finally, Johnny Appleseed, or John Chapman, planted apple orchards moving west. The rest is history. And in 1905, after 300 years of apples in North America, there were thousands of varieties of apples growing in the U.S. That brings us to the present day, where agriculturalists work in their apple orchards, both wholesale and market, to produce and sell apples to make a living. The apple to consumer process all begins with the individual apple on the tree. This apple is treated and taken care of to ensure the best quality product. It is then picked during harvest, following strict food safety practices, and placed in bins that are weighed by the bushel. These apples are then moved to the packing house where they are washed, sized, sorted, and packed. They're then placed in refrigerated storage and distributed to either the wholesaler or directly to the market as quickly as possible in order to ensure the fruit remains fresh. There are so many careers that work to bring these apples to the table. Nurseries graft and start the trees. Grafting is used because most fruit trees don't come true to seed, and cuttings won't root easily. The orchard then receives these seedlings from them. Scientists are constantly working to develop new technologies, such as sunburn protectants. Engineers work to develop precision spray technologies and other precision ag tools to use in the orchards. Truck drivers and trucking companies play a big role in delivering products to wholesalers. Finally, the companies that purchase the apples and their employees that package, process, and distribute the final product are critical to the industry. Thousands are employed by the apple industry and rely on it to provide for themselves and their families. Now that we've learned about the apple industry as a whole, let's dive straight into our interview with Miss Linda Pryor, a third-generation farmer in Western North Carolina. She operates a multi-crop farm alongside her husband and father-in-law. She's passionate about sharing the story of her family's farm with others so that they can understand more about the food they eat and how agriculture benefits everyone. So first, to start us off, Ms. Pryor, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be our eighth guest.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get to talk about apples.
So first, to start us off, I just want to ask, would you mind giving us your story about how you began your career in agriculture and fruit production?
So I grew up on what would be considered probably a small or hobby farm. My dad always had something going on, and I loved helping him. We raised goats for meat, chickens, did some hay. He had a small amount of orchard also. And the area that I grew up in and still live in at the time was extremely big apple production. And so, you know, even if you weren't directly involved, everybody had a appreciation for it because there was orchard everywhere. So my education took me to a career in dentistry, and I worked as a dental assistant for several years, and then got married to my husband. We went to school together, known each other since childhood. Then having children and just being busier, I transitioned from working full-time as a dental assistant and part-time on the farm to full-time on our farm, and left dentistry. And so now it is my husband, father-in-law, and myself. And then we have one full-time employee, and then we use quite a bit of seasonal help too, depending on what time of year it is. But it's definitely always been a part of my life, but is now much more than it was growing up.
Yes, ma'am. How would you say that this transition from, like you said, working part-time to going full-time, how did this kind of impact the way you see the farm and work on the farm?
Well, I think it's very typical as far as other farm families that I know. One thing is, you know, benefits and insurance and all of those things that come into play when you're self-employed. Those things are a lot of times something that one spouse has to maintain, because it's hard to find that, you know, when you are self-employed. So just the, you know, that was a big step for us, for our family, and for the farm as a whole, to think, is this something that we can do and sustain? But it was, especially after having kids and they have to get places, it became harder to, you know, on my lunch break, try to help move equipment. And then as soon as you get off work, go to farm work, and on weekends, and then take care of a family too. So the transition was definitely needed for us, and it actually helped us as far as productivity, because it wasn't trying to fit it in as a secondary thing for me, but it's became more of a priority for me. So it helped us as a whole, and it was a good move for us. But I certainly see how it's not everyone is able to do that, because they need that outside job to be able to have insurance or benefits or whatever it is that they need that they can't get while they're self-employed.
Yes, ma'am. So would you describe what you currently do on your operation?
So whatever's needed is probably the best way to describe what I do. I take care of the clerical aspect of things, food safety, employees, but then I'm also in the field or orchard also too. It just completely depends on the day. So in the spring and fall, I'm very rarely inside, and I'm out doing all sorts of things, whatever's going on. And then in the winter, I try to catch up more on the things that can be done, that can wait and be done then. We try to do as much of our own maintenance as possible. So I oversee a lot of that, and just keeping up with things that need to be done. We use H-2A labor, which is the guest worker program. And part of that is that you have to provide housing. There's always a ton of maintenance to go with that pretty much year round. But in the winter, especially, we get everything ready for our inspection for the year. So I do that. During apple season or apple harvest, I drive a truck. So we'll get bins to the orchard where they need to be, and then load as they're coming out picked, and then take them to the company that's receiving them. So that's usually 6 to 8 weeks that's just continual hauling and moving apples around. During, we're a multi-crop farm, so during the spring when we're planting corn and you know, getting those things ready, we do hay, so help with that. So it just, it, no 2 days are ever the same, and it just depends whatever's needed that day. We are a very small crew of who's available all the time, so everybody has to be willing to do everything.
Yes, ma'am. I can kind of see that on our farm as well. It's just kind of whatever's needed, you get it done that day.
That's right. There's lots. I do lots of things that I've never done before.
Yes, ma'am. So I know you mentioned you also grow corn and hay. How does apple production differ from those kind of more traditional row crop style crops?
The biggest thing at harvest time, definitely, apples are, in all produce, extremely time sensitive. So whereas, row crop or grain, if you don't get to harvest it this week, then it's really not going to be a big difference if it, you have to wait until next week. With apples, the buyer wants the sugar at a certain level. And so it's then, it's right then. You could have rain that could make it drop, or you could, it could get too high that causes problems too. So the time sensitivity is probably the biggest thing with harvest. You have to, when the buyer's ready, they're ready. When the apple's ready, it's ready. And that all has to coincide with each other, and you have to get it done right then. Two, with crop protectants, supplying those, especially whenever we have, so we're in Western North Carolina and we have muggy days, and we'll get those afternoon thunderstorms, and that is just a breeding ground for disease. So staying on top of those things and just not having the time to wait. Not that you have a lot of time with any crop, but there's a little more room with the grain than there is with the apples. So that's probably one of the biggest things. The second would be the labor and the, you know, it's hand harvested. So there's no machine to go through and pick it for you. It's all hand harvested. The care that is taken when it's harvested is extremely important due to bruising. You don't want that to happen because then it will deteriorate. So I would say the time sensitivity and the labor are definitely the two biggest differences.
Yes, ma'am. So I know you were talking about time sensitivity and avoiding bruised fruit and making sure that the fruit doesn't go bad and sugar levels. So what technologies do you use to help ensure high quality fruit coming off of the farm?
So that starts, I would say, from the nursery level. We order our trees from a nursery. They are grafted there onto rootstock, and they are about 3 years old usually when we set them. So if we're setting new orchard, or just whenever, you know, things happen and we may just be spot replacing a few trees that something has happened and they've either fallen or died for whatever reason, and we'll replace them. So it starts definitely with having a good nursery, good rootstock. And then after that would be crop protectants that we're using. They are always advancing to safer products that can be minimally applied. You never want to use more than is necessary. Sprayer technology, the nozzles that get what you want exactly where you want it, with the exact amount, all of those things play in. And then food safety is huge. So our buyers expect that. We have certain standards that we have to meet. We do GAP certification, which is USDA. Then we do produce safety also, that is another certification. So we're making sure that we're meeting those standards, and then our buyers are looking that we're meeting those things, and the consumer's expecting that from those companies. So we're always trying to stay on top of anything that, you know, might be available that would help us to be more efficient for us. But then also, like I said earlier, you don't ever want to apply more of something than is necessary for two reasons. One, it's expensive. And two, you know, you don't want to use anything that doesn't need to be used or that isn't safe. And I think that that's one thing that's overlooked as markets change and more apples are imported from other countries, that they don't necessarily have those same requirements that we have. And so that's something that needs, as a buyer, you need to, as a consumer, look at, you know, if I'm if I'm choosing to buy this product, where did it come from and what are their regulations? Because something that would be allowed in another country may not even be legal to put on a crop here.
Yes, ma'am. I have to say, I don't guess I've ever really thought about it like that. Like, whenever I buy my apples in the grocery store, I just kind of assume that they're all grown in America. But now that you've mentioned foreign markets, I can kind of see where that can play a factor in competition with American-grown apples.
Right. There was specifically processed apples. So juices, things that purees, like that are in applesauce or in products like that. But lots of times on, you know, if you look at the next time you're at the grocery store, notice a bottle of apple juice. And lots of times it will say packaged in the U.S., but concentrate from wherever, another country. China's a huge exporter of apples and other countries too, but China's very big in exporting to U.S. for apples. And so just pay, you know, it's something you overlook. It's something you don't think about, but it's definitely important, especially if you are trying to be conscientious of what you're buying and where it's coming from and what their practices might be. So it has to be, the country of origin has to be included on that label or somewhere on the bottle. So it's interesting to walk through and look and see.
Yes, ma'am.
Where things actually come from.
I'll definitely have to start paying more attention to that because I never thought about it being manufactured in a different place than where the apples come from.
Right.
And stuff along those lines.
Right.
So kind of building off of that, how do you sell and market your product?
So fortunately, we have a lot of companies that we have worked with long term, and we do all wholesale. So we aren't doing anything direct to consumer. Our area has really blown up with just housing and population change over the last several years, and that has changed how we are able to market our apples too. So a lot of what happens in our county is agritourism, which is great. It's a good way for people to come out and see what's going on. But the way that we are set up, we don't really have that option. So we are still wholesale only, and we're dependent on, you know, the bigger buyers to come to the area and see what we have and be willing to buy it. And it takes multiple growers to be able to attract buyers like that. And so that's something that is always a concern of mine as we lose orchard in the area to housing or and other development. Then are we still going to be able to attract those buyers? Because they're not just going to come for us. They've got to be able to get enough of what they need. So we sell for processing. We sell for baby food and some different the squeeze packets of applesauce, things like that, different companies that are processing them into something else. And then we also sell to, which is a fairly, I say new, probably within the last 10 years, fairly new, the companies that do slicers, like that you would get in a kid's meal or at a food service type thing. So they take the apple and it has to be the same quality as like what would go to the grocery store. So it's not, you know, being processed or changed in any way. And then they slice it and they put it in some type of packaging that goes on to the food service industry. And so that's a great market because it's a higher quality apple is needed since it's going to stay intact to be in that slice. So that's something that has definitely helped as markets have changed to have that new opportunity. And then we also, it's important to have a juice market too, because apples that have had freeze damage or what would be considered the coals and not good for much else, that juice market is important to be able to use those too. But we're fortunate that we have people that we've been set up with for a long time and they still come and buy from us, and we have that good relationship. And they, you know, I think it's really important to have the consistency and the good quality and to keep up with the certifications that we need so that they know that we're doing things the right way. For instance, like with baby food, that end consumer it's extremely important to them that they can trust the brand that they're buying and they can trust what they're feeding a baby. So it's equally as important that we do what we're supposed to maintain that quality and keep that buyer happy and then their consumers happy. And it trickles down from starting from us doing the right thing all the way to the end consumer.
Yes, ma'am. So, kind of building on quality control and getting the end product to the consumer. So, how does harvest work on your farm? Or, more specifically, what does labor and quality control look like during harvest?
So, like I said earlier, we use H2A labor, which I have been extremely pleased with. That is a guest worker program that it's a pretty complex process. I should not pretty. It's very complex, but it is well worth it. So the worker applies on their end if they want to come, and then we apply on our end, and they are checked out, thoroughly vetted before they're allowed to come, as are we. And we have a lot of requirements that we have to follow. One of those is housing, food safe. We do food safety training for them. Everything from, not when they use, so everything's handpicked and we use ladders, not touching the rungs of the ladder when you climb, holding the sides of the ladder, not eating and drinking whenever you're, taking a true break and washing your hands, and just very simple things that make a big difference for food safety. So we do all that training with them. For harvest, we have about 20 workers, and it lasts, I say 6 to 8 weeks. It's probably more like 8 to 10 weeks, in the fall. And so we work 6 days a week, weather permitting. The only reason that we wouldn't is if it was extremely heavy rain, and they'll come in and pick all day. Then the apples are brought out, to like a loading area, and we have multiple different orchards, so we move around to, we'll pick one, and it may take a week to pick that one and then move to the next one. And then we load the bins onto a truck, and they go to the receiving facility, which is contracted through the buyer that's going to be getting them. And so there they are weighed, checked in, accounted for, and then do it all over again. Our workers, a lot of them come back year after year. I would say probably at least 75% come back every year, which is great because they are very good at what they do. They know our orchards, they know us, we know them. So it makes for a really good fit. We've had some people that we've had for year, lots of years, and they come back every year. And then after harvest, the trees have to be pruned in the winter. And same thing with that. We have the same people that return year after year to do that part too.
Yes, ma'am. I know you mentioned that food safety was a really big thing, and I can kind of see that on our farm a little bit too. It's a little different because I live on a poultry farm, and biosecurity is a really big issue with us, and ensuring that there's not a lot of cross-contamination with the birds. I can kind
Right.
of see this playing out on your apple farm too, making sure that you're not getting anything bad touching or in contact with the apples.
Yes, and that's so most companies that buy from us require the GAP certification, which is Good Agricultural Practices, and that's from USDA. And it is pretty in depth. You have to have a food safety plan, you have water tests. Depending on what you're doing, there's different requirements, but it's when you're first setting it up, it seems like, oh my goodness, it's very daunting to have to do all that. But once you get those things in place, and most of them are things that you're already going to be doing anyway, you just have to write them down and document them, it's well worth it. And it's, I can confidently say that I'm doing everything I can to, have the safest product that I can. I'm not doing anything. I'm eating these apples every day. I serve them to my children. And so that's reassuring, and I hope that that reassures, the people that are buying our products too, that this is a safe food to eat. And there's the it goes so far as, for example, like someone that's picking apples, or us even in the orchard, that we can consume water while we're working, but nothing else. And the reason for that being, say if we were to have a sports drink, like the powders that you put in water, if we were to have that and it had red dye in it, and then I'm handling the fruit, and then that fruit is going to someone that may potentially have a red dye allergy, I've contaminated it. And you don't even, it's hard to even wrap your head around that, because you see the end consumer sometimes feels so far removed. But that's how, we're thinking about that while the fruit's still hanging on the tree. And so it's, you know, I hope that people understand that, you know, we are thinking about cross-contamination from the very second we step foot in the orchard, you know, all the way through, and are mindful of, you know, if a bin of apples is picked and there is a tree there that an acorn might fall out of, we're going to make sure that that bin of apples doesn't get set under that tree in the loading area, because we don't want an acorn to drop in that box that could potentially, you know, contaminate the bin. So we're extremely careful about things like that. We also have to go through a mock recall for food traceability. So part of that audit that I was talking about is that we have to come up with a scenario where we can go back and trace that bin of apples. So for instance, something happens, worker comes up at the, you know, end of the day and has had some problem or accidentally dropped something into the bin. So each worker has a number that goes on their bin, and then each bin has a label, and then each block of orchard has a number or a name. So we're able to trace back to a very small area and to the worker that picked that bin. So if there is ever a problem, we can trace it within a very small window of location and the worker. And that way, you know, we can ensure that if something happens that we find out about after the fact, that we can go back and take care of it, remove that fruit from wherever it went, and, you know, resolve any problems before they become problems.
Yes, ma'am. That's really interesting. It sounds like your farm is very organized and y'all are very meticulous about.
We definitely try to be.
Well, it sounds pretty good to me. That's really impressive. So this is kind of an about face question. I know that you mentioned you're very active in the North Carolina Farm Bureau, but especially with the Women's Committee. Can you elaborate on your responsibilities and what you do with them?
Yes. So I'm very passionate about Farm Bureau. It has done amazing things for me. A lot of people, when you say Farm Bureau, they think insurance, but that's not, you know, and every state doesn't even have the insurance portion. But Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization and works to advocate for farmers and allow us to have a unified voice for the agriculture industry. I think now more than ever, it's so important to just share our stories with people. And, you know, people don't want to be just told, they want to know why. And so if I can share my story of how important agriculture is to me and my family, then I'm hoping that that will make someone else think and realize, you know, where their food and fiber come from and how important it is. So working with Farm Bureau, I'm just a volunteer, and that has allowed me to share my story with so many people from, you know, locally, just spend a lot of time at elementary schools, speaking to kids, all the way up to allowing me opportunities to go to DC and meet with elected officials about things that are impacting our farm. So it's been phenomenal for me. It gives me a good opportunity to do all of those things. It's also connected me with some amazing women. I was telling one of them recently, you know, being a farmer, being a farm wife, a farm mom, those things are incredibly hard. I feel like people don't, you know, just by nature, we're supposed to suck it up and go on and just take care of everything. And sometimes that's hard. And there are times, especially, you know, planting time and harvest time, that I feel like I am drowning. And it is so nice to have that group of women that I admire and look up to, and that I can say, you know, they did it and they raised their family and everybody's still getting along and functioning. So I can do this too. And just gives you the resource of people that you can call and say, oh my goodness, you know, this happened today, and either get advice or just have a listening ear. And that is just so important. It's important for everybody to have that, but it's a great group of just people that, you know, have similar interests and that understand. So I spend a lot of time volunteering and doing things, but I think what I get from it is far more than what I give to the organization. But So my husband and I both got started with Farm Bureau through Young Farmer and Rancher Program. And I think that's a great group too, especially, you know, if someone's just starting, it's hard to just start out, especially if you don't have the background, if your parents didn't farm, it's just something that you're interested or want to start in. That's a great resource to be able to connect with people. And then they have, you know, resources all the way up, but that's a great way to get started if someone is already in ag or wants to be, is the Young Farmer and Rancher program.
Yes, ma'am. And like you mentioned, I know Farm Bureau is all across the nation. Ours in Alabama, we're active in it. And like you said, came up through the Young Farmers Program and got involved there. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I, in our area, the Young Farmer Group is, for North Carolina, they are very strong. Our local area is not as strong as it was. And so I would like to see it build back up because I think, you know, if people don't get involved young, then they don't know about those other opportunities. You know, I'm unfortunately have aged out of YF&R, but it definitely opened me up to what opportunities there would be beyond that.
Yes, ma'am. Us too. So for my final question, just to kind of wrap it up, I wanted to ask, what is your favorite part of your job?
Gosh, my favorite part of my job is probably just knowing that I'm contributing to feeding people. Like when you think about that, is a huge responsibility. And it's an honor. And I take that very seriously and appreciate the fact that, you know, people are eating what I'm growing, and that's a big deal. So that's definitely my favorite part.
Yes, ma'am. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us and allowing me to interview you. I've learned so much today, and I know our listeners will as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I hope you've learned something new in this, the 8th episode of A Day in Agriculture. You can expect the next episode on December 30th and listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. To keep up with the latest updates about A Day in Agriculture, I encourage you to follow our Instagram. Thank you for listening. Sources used in this episode are as follows. U.S. Apple. Industry at a glance. Apple stages from the tree to the grocery store. An Apple industry outlook. Historic sites, NC. Apple history. Agricultural Marketing Resource Center. Commodities, apples. Extension UNH. Grafting fruit trees. WSU production guide. Environmental fruit protectants. If you would like access to the transcript of this episode or have any questions, contact adayinagriculture@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.